for that prayer, beautifully stated. As he also mentioned, over the next, it's about a six-week process or so. I haven't counted the weeks. We're in the process of selecting some additional men to be a part of the eldership. And I recognize that some of you may be visiting and don't even know what that is. But as part of the leadership here, and the elders have asked me to begin a series of lessons beginning last week, going on to today, and then over the next couple of weeks, the elders are going to be presenting their thoughts to you also as we go through this process. That sounds so clinical, process, but as we look at this together. You know, last week, what I shared with you, I believe, is the fundamental principle of living the Christian life, really. And it is the fundamental principle of being an elder, being a leader in God's kingdom. And it was from Mark chapter 10, where there's an argument going on, and Jesus brings his disciples together. And he says, "You know that the rulers of the Gentiles lord it over them, their high officials exercise authority over them." In other words, he says, you know how the world works. You know how things are. You go, you have a boss, you have someone over you, tells you what to do. They have authority, they're exercising it over you. You know how that is. And then I said, if you can memorize four words, it will do you a lot of good. Does me a lot of good. Did you memorize them? Let me help you out. We'll start out. Not so. That's really strong. Good. Not so with you. That's Jesus talking to us. Not so with you. Don't be like that. Don't be that kind of leader. Instead, whoever wants to be first should be your servant. Whoever wants to be the greatest needs to be slave of all. And that's really what we're looking at. Now, when we talk about eldership, there's two basic passages. There's a lot of passages, but there's two passages that we often go to. And you can turn to this one in 1 Timothy chapter 3. Is this on or is this on? What am I talking out of? I'm talking out of this. This is not on. Now, I'm not going to have it hanging on my ear. I don't know what's wrong. And I don't care what's wrong. It's okay. We can work this out. I just noticed when I moved away, it did that. So sorry about that. There's two passages. One's in Titus and one's in 1 Timothy 3. And I've read these many times, but I really started studying it again this week, or actually 2 weeks ago. And I am convinced, as I've read through these and dug into these words that describe what is called an overseer here, that I can state with confidence that no one qualifies. And I'm not talking about no one qualifies here, but no one really qualifies. Because as you look at these, and really the meaning, the heart of them, only it describes Jesus. And only he would qualify. And if we're really strict, if we take this as a legalistic listing, Jesus doesn't even qualify because he wasn't married and he had no children. That's part of the qualifications. So that hit me and I thought, my goodness, what a burden on the men who are being considered and considering this. But we have two lists, and we're going to look at these lists briefly in a moment. And they're different in some ways and they're the same in some ways. And if it was to be a strict requirement, these two lists, then either the church in Crete, which was written to the Titus, to Titus' letter, or the church in Ephesus, which 1 Timothy was written to, missed some of the qualifications. And so either the elders in Ephesus or the elders in Crete were not fully qualified. And so we'll look at this, like I said, and I think what is happening here is it isn't a strict legalistic list of requirements as much as it is the qualities of a person who's going to lead the church. It's more of looking at what I've called the character of an elder. You want to look at their character and be led by their character. Of course, Jesus set the standard in all things, and in this area of overseer or shepherd, he sets the standard. He says, "For you like sheep were going astray." This is in 1 Peter. "But now you have returned to the shepherd and overseer of your souls." And so that word overseer is the same word that is used here in 1 Timothy. And what, so we want to look at this. Let's read the passage together before we look into it more carefully. 1 Timothy chapter 3, verses 1 through 7. "Here is a trustworthy saying. If anyone sets his heart on being an overseer, he desires a noble task. Now the overseer must be above reproach, the husband of but one wife, temperate, self-controlled, respectable, hospitable, able to teach, not given to drunkenness, not violent but gentle, not quarrelsome, not a lover of money. He must manage his own family well and see that his children obey him with proper respect. If anyone does not know how to manage his own family, how can he take care of God's church? He must not be a recent convert, or he may become conceited and fall under the same judgment as the devil. He must have a good reputation with outsiders so that he will not fall into disgrace and into the devil's trap." First of all, we see this word overseer. What does that mean? What is the word overseer? Some translations, like the English Standard Version, King James Version, the New American Standard, many others, add a word in there which says the office of overseer. Now, when I hear that, that's what I think about when I'm called to the office. Oh, the office of overseer. I know there's a television program that I've only seen parts of called The Office. I thought about putting that up there, but it might be too light, and maybe that's too heavy. But the office of the overseer. The word is not in the original language, as the NIV shows. Literally, it says this. If you take it word for word and translate it from the Greek to the English, "If anyone of oversight aspires to a good work, he desires." Isn't that poetic? In English, it's poetic. In fact, the International Standard Version does turn this into poetry. It says, "The one who would an elder be, a noble task desires he." And that's kind of, it's a statement. It's a saying. And so they were trying to show you that this is just a saying that says, this is, if you desire this task, this work, being an overseer, that's a good thing. That's a beautiful thing. Some words have become very religious to us to the point we don't even understand them. And I've tried to explain these in classes and in sermons. Words like sanctify, justify, holy, redemption become very religious words. And here's another one, overseer. We hear the word and we have a concept. And some of you have that concept of office, of something very serious. And it is serious, but something that is uncomfortably serious. Some translations lean toward making a position or an office rather than a ministry or a service. And as you read through this and read other portions about an overseer, it's a ministry, it's a service. The word oversee means in our minds, I think most of us, a boss, someone in charge, someone telling others what to do. You read in the Old Testament, and you read about the Israelites in Egypt, and they were slaves, and they had, what did they have? overseers, people telling them what to do. The opposite is the opposite word of serve, the way we think of it sometimes in our culture. The word actually means a visitation or visiting. If you read over in Luke chapter 19, we're not going to go there, verse 44 and 1 Peter 2, 12, it actually is talking about the visitation of the Lord. The Lord's coming and that he's going to visit us. And it's that same word. And that's a joyous thing for some and it's a sad occasion for others, but it's Jesus coming to visit you. And that's the same word. He's coming to oversee. He's coming to visit us. It's a compound word where they take two words and put them together. And those two words mean appropriately fitting and to look intently. And they put those two words together, and it means a close, intense look at someone. In order to provide care and attention that is appropriate to the personal visitation. So you get this idea of someone who is watching over, who is looking over people's lives. And there's a care, he wants to provide care and attention to that person. And it's on a personal level, like you're sitting around drinking a cup of coffee together and you're finding out what the needs of that person is. When we read that word overseer or bishop, we don't really get that. I don't get that sense. I'm saying we, and you might all be saying, no, that's how I see it. But me, when I see the word overseer, I see someone who is, you know, kind of the boss of me, rather than someone who is sitting with me and saying, what's your needs? How can I help you? And that's what the word actually means. Just as bishop gives us the idea of this ecclesiastical position, or overseer, this idea of a taskmaster, the original meaning is more akin to someone who has deep concern and care and gives personal attention to your needs. I said it's both in 1 Timothy and Titus. And I'm going to show you a chart here. And I don't like charts like this, by the way. But I'm going to put it up because I know some of you love them. There you go. Small letters. And, you know, if you notice, most of mine are real big, but I'm going to leave this up for a little bit just to show you. 1 Timothy and Titus, you have Greek words, you have English words, and you can see the red ones are the ones that are exactly parallel, and the other ones aren't. Two passages that list these qualities of elders. 1 Timothy, the word overseer is used. Titus, you can see, is both overseer and elders are used. So you see that they're parallel. When one says elder, when one says overseer, we're talking about the same thing. Depending on how you count them, I counted 1 Timothy has 14 characteristics. Titus has 13. Five are the same, as I said. And I think that is telling because what we do traditionally, at least in my experience, is we combine the both list and we say a person who is going to be an overseer of the church has to meet these requirements of both lists. And there's, you know, 20 different things that we have to line up. And as I said before, if that's the case, then the church in Ephesus missed 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 characteristics. Or the church in Crete missed whatever, I can't count the ones that missed, some other ones. You see what I'm saying? So these some say, well, they're somewhat parallel. Let's see, I don't know, not self-willed, not blameless. This is easy. Blameless down here is the same as above reproach. They're similar. There's a synonym there maybe. But the words are totally different words. We're talking about different character here. I think what Paul is saying here is I'm giving you the general idea, the general direction of what a man should be like who is serving in this capacity. These are his characteristics. It'd be like saying an elder should be Christ-like. And we'd all go, amen. But everyone should be Christ-like. Well, that's so broad, so let's narrow it down. Maybe an elder should be a servant, like we saw in Mark chapter 10. And we say, yeah, that's true. But again, that maybe that narrows it down a little bit, but we're not really getting into the character of the person. And that's what I think Paul is doing here, because as you look at that, what of these do you not want to be like? Except for the women don't want to be the husband of one wife, they want to be the wife of one husband, right? But besides that, who doesn't want to be gentle? Who does not want to be hospitable? Who does not want to be not quarrelsome? You know, so we look at these and say, these describe the character of Jesus. This is the type of person we want to be. So we have qualities of a person who is growing in these areas, and we looked at them, we see maturity, and we say, this is the type of person I want to be like. This is the type of person I want to lead me and be that person who will come to me and visit with me and help me and be concerned about my needs and point me in a spiritual direction. Most of these are character traits if you look at them. Achievements, status, race, wealth, charisma, extrovert, introvert, anything like that is not considered at all. One last point. I think each man who's considered to do this work, when you look at these things, has to take a serious look at himself. And not so much to see how far he fails, because that's easy to do, but how much he needs to grow and continue to grow in his Christ-likeness. Justin said it well. You know, as we come and take the Lord's Supper, it's not to look at how bad I am, but how much good God has done for me. And it's the same thing as you look at this list, it'd be easy to say, oh, how far I fell, how far I fall in certain areas. But it's how much grace God has extended to me to be maturing and growing in this area. We're going to look briefly, very briefly, at the characteristics in 1 Timothy only. We don't have time to do both. We're going to start with the ones that are exactly parallel. There's five that are exactly parallel, and we're going to look at start with those and then go on to the other ones. He says, you must be the husband of one wife, of but one wife. Literally, if you just take the words, and I'm going to do a lot of this literal stuff, it says of one woman man. That's what the words are. Or you could say, he's a one-woman man. The word woman in Greek and wife is the same. And the word husband and man is the same, too. So it could be one wife husband, or it could be one-woman man. And so I'm looking at this. Is this speaking of a man's character or his position? Because he has said, once I do. And a lot of people say, I do. But does that qualify them to be a one-woman man? One, did I say that right? Yes. One woman, man. I'm going to say one man, woman pretty soon here. One woman, man. And I don't think it's his position so much that he just said it. It's a matter of the quality of his marriage, not the fact of his marriage. And the phrase itself, being a one woman, man, means that he set personal boundaries. There's some boundaries that he set here. If he's married, he's faithful. He's not flirtatious with other women. You know, you can be married and be technically faithful and be a very flirtatious person. And that terminology didn't mean just, oh, you're married, but it meant, what's this character? Is he flirtatious? If it's his position, then a widower is disqualified. Remarried men are put in questionable categories. But if it's character, we're seeing a man who can be trusted shepherding women. That's the key. Can this man be trusted in how he has set his boundaries around women that are not his wife? Is he the type of person who can shepherd other women? He knows how to do that well. He knows proper limits emotionally, and he knows proper limits physically. He's a one-woman man. Second, he's self-controlled. This word means to think clearly. It means he's sane. Not as the opposite of insane, but he's a sane thinker. It means that he's temperate, he's discreet, And again, this combines two words together that one means sound, safe, inner outlook. And it also means a person who is moderated or balanced from God's perspective. So we have a person here who is allowing God to direct his emotions. He allows God to direct his thoughts. He's not a self-directed person. He thinks clearly, and he thinks clearly because he's thinking the way God wants him to think. Self-control. Hospitable. We spent at least two, maybe three lessons last year on hospitality. And I went into depth on these, so you can go back and look at the archives and find that if you really want to know. But literally the word means a friend of strangers. This person is welcoming. He's friendly. He's a warm person. He's the type of person who will reach out to other people. He opens his heart to people. He opens his home to people. He's considered to be a hospitable person. Not given to wine or not given to drunkenness, as the NIV says. It's a really interesting word. It means staying beside wine. Staying beside wine. And as I thought of that, I said, I got the idea of someone with a drink in his hand. You know, he stays beside his wine. He has a glass of wine. You knock on his door, he's got a beer or whatever, you know. And I know people who take wine medicinally, like Timothy was told by Paul to do. But I don't envision these people as necessarily what we'd call nursing a beer. He's not the type of person that you perceive is comfortable with a wine glass, with wine or beers or whatever, alcohol in his hands. He's not that type of person. He's not violent. This is only used two times in the Bible, in this passage and the Titus passage. And it speaks of a person who's ready to raise his fist. That's what it means. He's ready for a fight. You know, you want to get down with him, he's ready for it. And he's kind of pushing, egging it on. But it goes even more to a quarrelsome person who fights with his mouth. He's ready for a fight, whether it's with his fist or whether it's with his mouth. And that covers the five that are in both Timothy and Titus. Let's look at the rest in 1 Timothy. He says, this person is above reproach. He doesn't, that literally it says, not laying a hand on, not seasoned. He is one who isn't seized. And the idea is if you throw blame at him, the charges won't stick to him. You can blame people for a lot of stuff, right? But he's the type of person, if you go to him and say, I don't want to take a person's name, and I say any name in English, and it's going to get someone in this room. Kalepi, there you go. That's a Fijian name. No, Kalepi, I saw him the other night down there. That's Caleb in English, by the way. There's Calebs around. I saw old Caleb down there, and he was just as drunk as he could be. Or he was in a fight. Or he had his arm around another woman. And you think about it, that doesn't sound like him. That's not him. And so you throw a charge, a blame at him, and it just won't stick. The whole of his life is something that if you malign his character, it'd be obvious. He'd go, no, I know that guy. Clyde Jones would not do that. Right? I mean, that's that kind of character, right? That you know that if you heard something really terrible about Clyde, you go, that's not Clyde. That's what that means. He's temperate. Some translations say sober. It literally means to abstain from alcohol. But metaphorically, it means someone who is clear-minded, clear-headed, alert. He refrains from any kind of excesses. Anything that dominates a person's life, whether it's alcohol, entertainment, anything that intoxicates a person's life so he can't think clearly, is not a temperate person. It doesn't have to be just alcohol. It can be anything. He is respectable. The word means orderly or decent. The opposite of this word is chaotic. He's not a chaotic person. All right, you wouldn't classify this person as confused, disorderly, chaotic. But he's respectable. He's someone who has an organization in his life. He knows when to say yes. He knows when to say no. You get that idea that he has some control over. It's very similar to the self-control, but it's a little bit different. It comes from the word cosmos. Cosmos, the world. And it means just an ordered world. We know when the sun's going to rise. You might not know the exact time, but you know in the morning it's going to rise, and at night it's going to set. There's this order, and you know that it is winter now, right? It is winter, isn't it? It's winter now, and what comes next? Everyone would say spring. How do you know that? Because the world is orderly. We know that. And it's the same thing with this person. He's an orderly person. You just know you can count on him. He's respectable. Things are such that on a Sunday, you would know that, yeah, he'll be here, because that's the way his life is. You know the type of person he is, orderly. Able to teach. This is one that is only used here and in 2 Timothy, when he's talking about a servant of the Lord must be able to teach. And I kind of dug around this because I was like, well, what does this really mean? Because this is one that a lot of times say, well, that person's not able to teach. He doesn't qualify to be an elder. It means skillful in teaching. That's what it means. And my question is, how skillful? And does this mean that he's a gifted speaker? You know, there's some people who are gifted in speaking, and some people grow in their ability to speak, but does it mean he's gifted by God to speak? Normally in our culture, we think of public teaching, only public teaching, but I know of many men who are skillful in private teaching who do a poor job in public teaching. I don't think that disqualifies them. They're skillful in teaching in the way they do it. It's based in a word that actually means he's able to learn. In some translations, some commentaries think that it should be translated instead of able to teach, but able to learn. You know, I think a skillful teacher is also teachable. You know, someone who is skillful in teaching also knows how to learn from others. And I think it means someone who has learned skillfully how to use God's word in order to shepherd or guide other people, whatever the format of that teaching is, public or private. He is to be gentle. The word means to be fair, not overly strict. He's an easy person to approach. He's the kind of person who is patient when criticized, responds in kindness, looks at the real intent, looks at what's truly at stake in a conversation. He's not quarrelsome, and originally this meant hand-to-hand combat. It developed into fighting with words similar to the other one word. You're not a quarrelsome or contentious person. Some translations say the opposite in trying to bring this out. It says peaceable. Some say peaceable. He's a peace person. He's not a lover of money. You know, anything we love, we pursue with gusto. I love fishing, someone says. Does someone who says he loves fishing, will you find him fishing? Yeah. You know, whatever he loves, he pursues. And so just like the word hospitality meant lover of strangers, someone who pursues strangers and reaches out and is a friendly person, this person's mind is not a lover of money. He's not a person who's going to be, his heart and mind is in materialism and accumulation of wealth, and that's not a top priority in his life. He might be wealthy, that's fine, but it's not the focus of his life. That's not the pursuit of his life. He doesn't love money. And then he says, not a recent convert. Simply means that he's not a new Christian. He's not someone who has recently come to faith. And there's a warning here. It says, otherwise he may become conceited. And as I thought of that, that's a danger for everyone. It's a danger for everyone. Anyone who is placed in a position that we think is leadership, it's easy to get conceited. And so I think we need to all take that to heart. The word conceited is a really interesting word. It comes from the word smoke, and it means blowing smoke. That's actually what it means. It's like a cloud up in the air and having a muddled mindset, poor judgment. You know, as someone who's a novice, and you know this in work, you know, you've seen people at work who's been put in a position, have been advanced before they should be, and, you know, they don't know what they're doing. They're just blowing smoke. They're wasting, they're just, that's all they're doing. And he says, that's why this in the Lord's church is so much more important that you don't have someone just blowing smoke. A good reputation means he has a good witness, good testimony. When those outside the church speak of him, they'll speak well of him. Those outside the church know him, they'll speak well of him. I didn't mention verses 4 and 5, which I think is basically a expansion in some ways of the husband of but one wife, where it says, that, let me just look at it, he must manage his own family well. Let me just mention this very quickly. The word manage there is a really neat word. It means to stand before someone as a model, as an example. He must manage his family well. We think of a manager who is telling people what to do, but the word actually means he is someone who stands before his family and he's respectable and his family looks to him and he has a positive impact on their life because of his example. The more we examine these qualities, the more I examined it, the more I thought, man, I need to grow in the grace of God. These all, as you look at them deeply, just bring out the qualities of Jesus. And I don't believe that if we're strict, as I said, no one's going to be able to measure up in totality. But as we look out among us, there are men who have matured to such a point that others around them can look to them and say, that's the type of person I want to be. That's the type of person I want to follow. That's a person that I would like to shepherd me and guide me and sit down and talk to me and aid me in my walk with the Lord. God grant us the wisdom and the ability to pursue this excellence. I often do what I call an expanded paraphrase. I'll take a passage I've studied deeply and I'll paraphrase it and I'll kind of expand the words. And I did that with this. And it might help bring out the meaning as we read it overall. We read it in the New International Version. Now I'm going to read in my expanded paraphrase and maybe that will help us get a sense of what Paul is calling this person to be. This is a worthwhile statement. If anyone has a strong inclination and yearns to be involved in the lives of others and desires to care, help, and give them personal attention according to their needs, he has a passionate desire for a noble and beautiful task. Therefore, one who is keeping an eye on the flock in such a personal way must be someone who, if blamed of wrongdoing, the accusation won't stick to him. He's a one-woman man, clear thinking, and free from life-dominating influences. He is safe because he is well-balanced by God, well-ordered and decent, generous in his friendship to strangers, has a knack to teach. Not the type to be associated with drinking alcohol, not the quarrelsome type looking for a fight. On the other hand, he is a fair and reasonable person, not overly strict, but striving for justice beyond ordinary justice, seeking the spirit of the law. You won't find him in the middle of a war of words. He's not dominated by getting ahead in this world and loving money. You hang around his family and you'll find a model to follow. He has a respectable track record with his children who know their place in the family, looking up to their father because of his godly character. Indeed, if a man can't properly lead and direct his own family, how can he take care of God's called out ones? He can't be a new Christian. This is in order that as a novice, he won't be blowing smoke and muddling about in pride, or he might fall into the judgment of the devil. Now it's necessary that those outside God's church speak well of him. Otherwise, he may be tripped up into a disgraced reputation and be caught in the snare the devil set for him. Let's continue to pray as we continue this process of selecting elders for this church. Our elders are going to come forward in a moment. One has been up here all morning leading singing. That's Ed. And the other two, Richard and Chip, will be up here. If you have any need that you want to express to them, any prayers that you want to pray with them, please come forward as we stand and as we sing the song.